Well, hello and welcome to the 158th episode of the ANDF podcast with me, Al Coates, and him,
Scott Casson Reddy.
Oh, oi, look oi. At you. We are the sand in the sandwiches of the seaside pack lunch. That is the adoption. But, I can't really think of what I'm saying.
That's gritty. That's gritty.
Gritty. It's ages since I've talked to you, even though what is odd is that we're podcasts, like we recorded lots in the beginning of February, and then it's like, yeah. I haven't talked to you since. So it's a bit odd, really.
Yeah, well, I had like, what was it, 4 months off or something? I don't know how long it was. Well, it felt like 4 months,
I
tell you.
I do think that I need to talk to the HR department because I find this really peculiar phenomenon that like a Casson Rennie weekend is 4 nights and 5 days. And a Casson Rennie week is at least 12 nights and 13 days. A Casson Rennie fortnight, we're just all bets are off. It's literally as long as you want it to be. So when you said, I'll be away for a bit of February, I didn't mean, when did you go away and when did you get back?
When did we go away? Oh, my days. Was it the 6th or the 7th? And then we came back on the 22nd.
That's literally all of February.
This is Tristan all over, right? Okay. And all of our friends know this, right? If Tristan has fancy going away for a weekend, you need to book a week off. It's that simple.
Exactly. Exactly. Like the end of January, I had lots of plans and we'd all do this and you go, I do have a week off. And then he was like, you just disappeared.
Yeah, well, it's amazing how it clashed with a lot of things. There was a lot of things because when we first booked it, so we just for info, we went on a cruise, which obviously is a specific date. However, we hadn't booked flights, and it was the flights that knackered us up because we just couldn't find flights. So that's why it ended up so long. So we ended up in Florida for 5 days, then the cruise, and then Florida for 2 days, 3 days.
Florida for 5 days? It isn't a layover for a cruise.
I know. Yeah,
that is shocking. So you need to have words for your husband. He's got needs diary help. He's got some stuff. That is absolutely shocking.
Yeah, and everybody was coming in at different times. So we landed, and then the next day, mother-in-law and father-in-law landed, and then the next day, eldest son and his girlfriend landed, and then we had to kind of do all that. So Tris did all that because I wouldn't, he had to do all the organising, picking people up.
I'll be honest,
all that sort of stuff.
You sort of lost me about 3 minutes ago in this conversation. I have no sympathy for you.
It was sunshine, it was swimming pools, it was jacuzzis, it was lovely. Yeah, I know, sorry about that.
I'm not interested.
I know, sorry.
All I know is that I was very brave and I managed to keep the whole podcast going, the whole system. I even put an intro on an interview we did with Nick Burke. Do you remember Nick?
Yes.
Yep.
Oh, did you have to do it yourself? Oh.
Shut your face. Honestly, I felt like I was cheating on you. It was really odd sensation.
I was going to say, did you play two parts? Did you do a Scottish accent and then your own voice?
No, I did. Honestly, I felt really guilty because I know that you get a bit funny about that. I'm squeezing you out.
Well, I mean, I think in some ways I've managed to do that myself, haven't I? Because we were just chatting before it came on and we chatted a couple of, it was probably early January, mid-January, I don't know. And just with everything that goes on, because we love doing the podcast and nobody's given up the podcast, just to be clear before we start. But we have very different kind of home lives and ways that we work and stuff. So you can, you have your own diary.
Yeah,
that you manage and stuff, and you're also a social worker, whereas I'm pretty busy doing what I do, and then the evenings I'm kind of house husbandy kind of person that has to do all the things. Yeah, exactly.
Casseroles.
Yes, exactly. So so I chatted to you, and we've decided that I'm not going to do the conversations anymore, the adoption and fostering, the ANF conversations, because I just felt that I wasn't doing them justice. Unless there's a really juicy one that comes along, of course.
Yeah.
And then,
of course, you'll pick the good ones. Like the good really, ones, really juicy ones. Yeah.
But it just felt like I needed to kind of step back from one of the things that we do, and that is the one that I'm going to step back from. So,
absolutely
you
fine.
Politely fine. And very kindly agreed that that's fine. Part of it as well is when I say not doing them justice, it's because I just didn't feel like I was asking the right questions, and I just wanted to kind of, to talk as well. So, and that's not what the conversations are about. Whereas you're a social worker, so you're trained to get to the bottom of issues and all that sort of stuff and ask all the right questions.
I know you probably haven't listened to the latest one from Rodney, but a really cracking response from
I've seen the responses.
Yeah. So yeah. If people haven't listened to it, I really recommend listening to it. So, and I know you've probably not had time because you've been away on your like your grand tour of South America. Yeah. Your very long weekend in Ecuador. maybe Honduras, visiting Mexico, Honduras. Well, I should check the stats for Honduras, see if there's anyone listened in Honduras.
Never mentioned it.
Yeah. it's just a remarkable story of someone who sort of... It demonstrates the complexity of adoption. You know, he was adopted in New Zealand, then moved to the UK, and then kind of his birth family kind of reconnected him. I'll not tell too much, but I really recommend people listen because it just opens up a can of worms. And I'm not going to speak out of turn, but half of what Rodney wanted to tell, we decided we weren't going to put on the podcast because there was so much more to it. But a really, really fascinating insight into and just really remarkably honest of Rodney. And we were the first people I was the first person he'd ever told that in that sort of context.
Oh, wow.
So it's really good. It's fantastic. But shall we crack on with the episode? Because I believe that we've got a much anticipated interview with Family Future, Scott. So they got in touch with us way back when you were young and happy in September, actually. And we diary clashes and things.
Young and happy, was it?
Yeah, back then. before you had to use your Grecian 2000 just for men.
I'm allergic to that. I can't use it. Anyway, go on.
No denial of his... anyway.
I can't use it. Have you seen the state of this beard? Look, grey, slate grey. Actually, no, silver fox.
Silver. So, I've got a bit gingery, pepper or corny ginger thing. Anyway, that's on this week's podcast, men talk about beards.
But their beards.
It's a special interest podcast. Maybe we should start a sideline anyway. We should start our own oil, beard oil for podcasters. Yeah. So we talked to Jay Vaughan from Family Futures. They got in touch with us, which is a bit unusual. So I'm always a bit suspicious when people want to get in touch.
You do get very suspicious, don't you? Very suspicious.
Hey, why do you want to talk to us? That's not how it's meant to work. And Family Futures, I guess, how would you describe Family Futures to anyone who didn't know who they were? Because there'll be people who don't know who Family Futures are. Who are
they? It's interesting, isn't it? Because I think if you know Family Futures, you think that they're an adoption support agency. But they are not. They're actually a voluntary adoption agency, which is interesting because that's what we found out when we were chatting to her. And I'd never realised that. And I haven't been aware of Family Fortunes. It's a totally different thing. I've been aware of Family Futures for a few years. And it was their previous CEO who retired recently. And I can't remember his name from the life
Alan
of me now.
Alan Burnell.
Yes, that's it. And he was one of the founders of it. And that's when I was aware of them. I became aware of them because of a number of people that I knew who had had access to kind of adoption support from them.
Yeah.
And what I was aware of was that they were expensive. I don't want to undermine what that offer is, but as an agency providing adoption support, they were up there, but they were also up there in terms of the cost as well. However, anybody who had dealings or support from Family Futures always spoke very positively of them. So I think it was, it was the right time to kind of chat to them. And we had quite a few questions that we asked, and including, we talked about the adoption support fund because, with them being so expensive, we're not laying the blame at the Family Futures store for this, by the way. But
we can if you want, but that's another podcast.
When the fair access limit came in,
I should maybe there was a lot of discussion.
No, yeah, well, when the fair access limit came in, it was there was kind of a lot of discussion around why this had happened and what have you, and again, not blaming Family Futures, but certainly the contribution of the costs of their therapies and support was rather high, shall we say. But,
No, that was very measured of you. That was very measured response from you.
Yeah, we're not out to blame anybody.
We're not. And what I was reflecting on, there was one question that I came away and I wish I'd asked, and it was there was a discussion around about the fair access limit, which I think Jay was really honest about that, really, because she's come into the role at this point in time, so we can't sort of we can't hold our feet to the fire for stuff, you know, 10 years ago. I mean, I have to say, Alan Bunnell, the only time I met him, an incredibly generous individual in relation to his time and his advice and his support that he gave to us years ago about something else. But I think that the question I wish I'd asked was that she, when we talked specifically about the FAL, the Frere Access Limit, she said it's not, it's a really, it's an amount that would cover a low-level play therapy course or a... And I said, and I felt I missed a trick there because actually there's a lot of people who need something in between. They don't need play therapy and they don't need this really high-end stuff. There's a lot of people who would really benefit from a time-limited intervention and the Frere Access Limit covers that from under the service. I don't think it would cover it from them. But I think it was, I like you, I didn't realise that they were an option agency, obviously very small numbers, but very focused and very incredibly attention to detail sort of.
And I think at a time where, you know, we had an email a couple of months ago, didn't we, from a family who were concerned around their agency who were kind of stepping back from this easy access to kind of therapy and stuff. And I think it kind of comes at the right time for that discussion again about what is the value of the Adoption Support Fund to families. You know, is it something that is, you know, and as somebody who can't access it, just to be very clear about that, I think it is a worthy discussion to be had, because before we had it, there was, you know, things were bad for families who needed that support. Agencies weren't providing it. Some agencies at that point didn't even have post-adoption teams. You know, that's how kind of tricky it was to kind of traverse. But I think what it's made, what that and regionalisation has done is it's made agencies focus on the post-support that is available and that isn't available. And, you know, the ASF has been used for a number of things, including training up kind of workers to be able to provide certain things. It's not just about buying in therapy. It's also about the provision within the agency. So if, you know, if social workers have been trained and been able to provide play therapy or NVR practitioners, you know, like yourself, you know, you've done that, haven't you? And you're able to provide that, but as kind of an independent provider.
Nice plug. Thank you. I'm available for weddings, funerals, and bar mitzvahs.
Yeah, bar mitzvahs. But if it's available within the agency now, I think that that is a discussion that we need to be having, because I think people are thinking that the ASF is there just for buying in therapy, when in actual fact, a lot of agencies have skilled their teams up to be able to provide this internally. And it's not that they're saying you can't have it. It's just they're saying, well, actually, this is available within the agency now, so we can... You know, we can do it an alternative way that doesn't depend on the Adoption Support Fund. So,
yeah,
I think it is a worthy, you know, time to be discussing it, I guess.
Yeah, yeah, no, and absolutely. And I think the interview we chatted about that, and it was quite a while ago now, so I can't remember the exact details, which is a bit embarrassing. I should have listened to it again, but I'm been busy. I know. I think one thing I reflected on was that the minute we press record, I always get the feeling that we get some guests who are really sparky, really, and I think Jay was just a little bit reserved when we pressed record, and I think she was cautious, and I'd chatted to her a pre-chat where she was very much more animated about stuff.
But that's the mistake you made. You did that pre-chat thing. What do we tell our guests? We always say, don't tell us now, because if you tell us now, it's not going to be the same the second time.
Absolutely. See? So wise. It's true, though, honestly. People think I'm being moody. But having said that, I did do that with one guest, and they refused to come on until we agreed. Have I not told you that story?
No.
Unless I was willing to provide like a list of questions I was going to ask, they refused to come on. And it wasn't a person coming to tell a personal story. A person coming their personal story. It was someone who was coming in about something else. And I just said, oh, look, I'm just... That's just not going to happen. It's not how I roll personally. I haven't got the time or energy.
Definitely not how we roll on here, is it? You know. Oh, well, you know what? If anybody wants to hear stories like that, then you'll have to come and see our live tour later on this year, because that's the sort of things that we're going to be talking about.
The inside track on some of the interesting people we've had on. Which nicely segues into the email we got this week from our American cousin.
Oh, yes. Well, I just wanted to mention it, really, because I thought, wow, okay. So it's caused a lot of discussion on the podcast. We've asked a number of different guests about it, and we were talking about Zach and Alison, who came on the conversations a couple of months ago now and talked about their now let's get this right,
take a deep breath,
non-monogamous ethical non-monogamy, ethical ethical non-monogamy. So that was the preamble to that, which was a podcast. Yes. It was from New Family Social. And then Zach and Alison got into contact and wanted to talk to us about their polyamorous. Yes. That's how they defined it. Not polygamy, frank, which I made the mistake.
You are the specialist correspondent on this issue.
Anyway, So listen, long story short, that has come out. That's caused us to actually, you even said, because you replied to the email, you even said it's got you actually thinking about that within your role and with your colleagues as well, which I think is bloody brilliant, because is that not what we're here for?
Absolutely.
We're here to kind of think about what we should be challenged on and stuff. Anyway, long story short, Zach and Alison dropped us a line to let us know that as a result of coming on the podcast and being so open and honest, that they've actually been able to come out to a number of people in their lives. And I just thought, do you know what? For them to tell us that is great. And thank you so much, if you're listening, Zach and Alison, for coming back to tell us that.
Yeah.
Also for them to have had the reception that they've had. They've had a very positive reception from friends and family. And, you know, I just think, wow, okay. So, you know, yeah, again, you know, we don't think that we're changing the world, but sometimes just by having someone on that can change their life a little bit. And I just think it's nice. I think it's nice that they came and told us.
Good,
I think that's lovely that it's had that positive impact for them.
It warms the cockles of our heart.
It does.
Well, shall we crack on with this podcast then? We'll put Jay Vaughan from Family Futures, who are London-based therapeutic service with, you know, all of that kind of stuff, adoption service. We've got a few things coming up the next few months. We're going to be talking about, we've got a social worker in relation to a digital letterbox service coming on, talking about their service, which is really exciting.
I'm laughing because you've got so much on, you don't even know where you are at the minute.
Honestly, I don't know whether I'm coming or going. We're going to do, I think this is going to be a really interesting one. We're going to do a podcast about adoption disruption.
Mm, yeah.
So we've actually got a social worker who is who comes from a family where adoption has disrupted it. So that's really interesting. And we've also had a few people already message us. So if people have got, I mean, please, if people want to message us, and that can be anonymously, that can be just privately, or that can be things that you maybe want to share, you know, or you want to kind of comment you want to make. It's the podcast email address is something.
anfpodcast@gmail.com.
ANF.
All letters, A&F, podcast at gmail.com.
I think it's in the show notes. It should be in the show notes.
It probably
but we
should
really
be, yeah.
love getting comments from, and also if you've got time and energy, wherever you get listened to this, if you could put in a review on your, whoever you get your host is, be that Apple, iTunes, Alexa, Google, Spotify.
Yeah, but we only want the 5-star reviews. We don't want none of your 1-star reviews.
I noticed we're 4.6 on Amazon, on Apple, and I think that's
was early days, wasn't it? That was early days where our tech was, we were using Skype at that point. Do you remember them days? Oh, that was nice. Oh.
The sound of Skype, I have a post-traumatic reflux reaction to that. The
it's
dial
triggering.
Tone Skype
it's
call,
triggering like, when totally I hear the Skype tune.
Yeah, but it's also people who've maliciously put bad reviews on there as well. Oh yeah, totally.
Oh, I didn't realize.
But the thing
that.
Is, they can't because they don't want to say who they are. They've just given like a star ring, so you don't have to put your name to it. But they've given like a 1-star out of spite, which is, you know, hate is going to hate. What are you going to do? Anyway, we're prattling on now, and I've got things to do, and you've got I don't know.
I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah, your empty hollow life.
Just stuff. Yeah. It is now. That's how it feels now.
Oh, bless your little heart. you're not getting any sympathy.
No,
and
I know.
So, well, love you and leave you. And remember, Bon Jovi.
Anchovy.
So today we're speaking to Jay Vaughan, MBE, the CEO and the registered manager of Family Futures. So hello, Jay. Thank you for coming on.
Hello. Lovely to be here.
Excellent. Now, Jay, Some people may be familiar with who Family Futures are. Some people may not know anything about Family Futures. So how about you give us a kind of a brief run through who you are, how you came to be, and why are you talking to me? Because you came and your team came and got in touch with us. Why are you talking to me and Scott?
Okay. Well, Family Futures are registered as a voluntary adoption agency and independent fostering agency. But really, the main thing that we do is the assessment and treatment of traumatised children from the care system. So while we have that status and while we're registered with Ofsted, and I do think that those bits are important, very important, and that's sort of partly why I was here today to talk about that. I think a lot of our practice has grown from our assessment treatment service. The reason we set up I adopt and the voluntary adoption agency bit is because of what we saw happening in our treatment service. And then from that grew the idea, actually, we need to be thinking about fostering too. And I think the reason why the team at Family Futures got in touch with you is that we now have a fostering service as well as our adoption service, and we're keen to recruit foster carers. And we've been very struck, as you've been commenting on as well, by there's a change of what's going on in the country, that there aren't children up for adoption. Where those children exactly have gone is still a bit up for debate. That's not entirely clear. But certainly we need to be thinking now about permanency. So whether it's fostering, whether it's special guardianship, or whether it's adoption, we know that there are children that are going to need long-term homes. And maybe we have to shift our thinking, and agencies need to be thinking about how they can provide that permanency. Does that answer sufficiently?
Yeah.
does it, Scott? Do you want more?
Well, I was just going to say, I mean, Family Futures, historically, in my mind, anyway, mm-hmm. now, you know, I worked for Adoption UK for 5 years and mm-hmm. obviously was aware of Family Futures, was more about kind of the therapeutic interventions than being an agency that placed children, whether it be fostering, adoption, special guardians. So has it evolved from that, or was I just blinkered and thought that's what you did?
No, you're absolutely spot on right.
All right. Okay.
Really, what we're known for is our treatment service, and the fact that we really have stood our ground and pioneered that actually 6 sessions or 6 months does not work, and that children with profound early trauma need a long-term intervention. But I think what came out of that is we didn't set up the adoption service until 2008. So we've been going for 10 years. And what we'd seen in the 10 years is families coming to us in a terrible state of crisis. Yeah. It was heartbreaking. placements at the point of disruption, parents who'd been parenting as best they could with great intentions, but had not seen or understood what was going on with the child, who hadn't linked it to the child's history. And that's no disrespect meant to the parents. They weren't supported. They felt blamed, criticized, attacked, told it was their fault. The children should be better. They've been with you 7 years. Why aren't they better? So out of all of that, we began to think, well, why isn't there early intervention? Why are we seeing families 7 years into placement in such a terrible state? So then Alan, who was always one for bright ideas, said, well, it's only a few more regulations. Why don't we become a voluntary adoption agency? Okay. So it's just a few regs, we can do that.
Yeah, just a few forms.
Exactly. That then became a whole tale of realising the complexity, the regulations, the requirements. But we have since 2008 had this very small adoption service where we have specialised, with a bit of battling has to be said with local authorities and now regions, in providing early intervention. And what we've seen when we have reviewed those families, we've reviewed them in 2019, is that those placements are doing well. They've not been without their challenges, and those children have the same ACE scores or higher than the ones that were coming into our treatment service. But they had intervention from day one from us, had their challenges, but they're doing well, and we haven't had the disruption rate, and we haven't had the same crisis is hitting. And it's a small sample, but it's getting increasingly to be a bigger sample. And I think for us, that was really what we wanted to see, what would happen if you do this from the beginning. I do think there are some regions around the UK, there's some that I consult to, who are setting up early intervention.
Yeah.
And are seeing that if they put that in, what will happen later? Will they have the same crisis hit?
Yeah.
I mean, I was just going to finish off my bit before Al came in.
Okay. Yes,
he likes to think he's Jeremy Paxman. He's not really. I was just going to say, I mean, I am aware of families that had they not had the intervention of Family Futures, that actually, you know, their children would be living in other homes, in other fostering situations or residential. I mean, it's ridiculous when you think about it that, you know, that is the kind of, that is the extent that it can go to, because the early intervention system doesn't, you know, it's not what we kind of refer to. It's reactive rather than proactive.
Exactly. No, yeah. I mean, one of the wonderful things for me about having been at Family Futures for so long, so having seen so many different children and families, is they come back when they're in their 30s, they come back and say, can I have a bit more life story work? Or I've had a child, or would you like to come to my wedding? It's just, yeah, makes it all worthwhile, makes it possible to keep the hope, because out of some terrible situations, really good things can happen.
Mm.
A difference can be made. So,
yeah.
Sorry, one of my questions really, or it's more of a comment, is that, you know, the timeline you sort of describe puts you well ahead of the curve in relation to the government sort of, you know, 2011, the government, then sort of the coalition came in 2013, 14, there was the Times article, the intervention of the adoption czar, and that then that move to really seeing the need for post-adoption support. You were 10, 15 years ahead of that. So how do you reflect on then the implementation of that idea? Because in some ways it mirrors what you were doing, maybe not identical. What do you think then of the last 10 years of post-adoption support? Good, bad?
Oh, it's a difficult, tricky question, that one. One thing I should say, I'm not sure I should say it, but I'm going to say it, is Martin Deary came and talked to Alan.
Yep.
When he was doing his sort of looking around to see what was going on. So we feel very connected with a lot of the things that have changed, because they did grow from brilliant ideas that Alan had. And I'm sure there were a lot of other ideas in there as well. But I think that I can't say that there haven't been some good changes. I think the ASF has to be seen as a good thing. There may be some things that I personally would like to tweak. Like the first year when they gave everything, anything you asked for was mad. It was one extreme. But then to go to the 5K extreme shows no differential for the degrees of difficulties. So 5K is I don't know if I'm going off target, so you just rein me back in if I am. But 5K is a perfect intervention package for new placements, where they need a different level of intervention. But if you're in crisis and the child's found their birth parents on Facebook and has been actually having contact with them and the whole thing is spinning out of control, 5K is not sufficient. Oh, and they don't cover contact work. So I think there have been good things in the last 10 years. And I think there is progress, but times I think it's slow. I still think we could do better. I still think we haven't really got a grip of what's happened to these children and the implications. We're not really clear that actually they're ending up in the prison systems and psychiatric hospitals, some of them, and on the streets homeless, or they go into the army as gunners and then they get kicked out and they've got nothing. So I still feel passionate. Okay, it's a bit better, we're getting there, but we've got a long way to go if we're really going to help really make a difference.
Can I ask you about the fair access limit? Because I went back when I was young and happy. I was part of the expert advisory group. I'm just old and happy now. and I recall it being a very complicated conversation about the fare access limit, because actually I think something like over 95% of people who accessed the fund, that £5,000 was it sort of scratched the itch. It did what it needed to do. And but and being frank, you know, places like yourselves, £5,000 doesn't get you much bang for your buck at Family Futures, does it?
I think the £5,000 can work really well in certain situations, as I said. Mm. If it's a serious situation, no, £5,000 won't get you what you need at Family Futures, because what you need is much, much more. Mm. For children who, I'm just thinking of a case we've been looking at today, for children who are self-harming, suicidal, sexually acting out, at risk of being groomed or exploited on the streets, with parents who are at the end of their tether and often struggling with violence towards them at home, £5,000 isn't going to sort it. I think just common sense would tell you that £5,000 is not sufficient. Mm-hmm. It will do a really good job of a really good TheraPlay package. But I don't know. I'd be very interested to know from both of you, because it often perplexes me. The children we get referred for assessment at Family Futures generally are really complex.
Yeah.
They have had a lot of 5K interventions, but somebody's missed something, like the fact they've got a serious learning difficulty or the fact they've got FASD and they haven't been able to access the interventions. So I don't know how many 5K children there are out there, and young people.
Mm.
There must be, because there's lots of people getting 5K packages, but the ones we see, no, it's complicated. Mm. Oh, very rare do we see 5K.
It's an interesting one, because I don't live in the UK with my family. And we have had, when we did live in the UK, we were there when the SF came in, we did access that. But what's interesting is that there's, and we won't mention the agency, but we received an email that was sent to us from an agency the other day, where there's this kind of view from the agency that we've become dependent on therapy, and the kind of, you know, all this sort of stuff. Now, as someone who doesn't live with the ASF, okay, so, you know, hold my hands up. We have CAMHS in Ireland, and they're very good. I mean, our local CAMHS is very good. We get what we need from them and stuff, but we don't get therapy. We don't get all those kinds of things. But do you, I mean, I'm guessing not, but do you think that's right? Or do you think that it's just the fact that, you know, the ASF is, we have become dependent on it. I mean, let's be honest about it. As families, what's the alternative? I know that's a...
To the ASF or to the dependency issue?
All of it. Sorry. I was just going to say, I'm not very good with the one question here. I guess it's, you know, dependency, ASF, and you know, the need for, you know, therapy. Is it something that, because we've been given it, we're now dependent on it? Or is it just the fact that we genuinely do need it as families, you know?
Okay, I'll have a go at answering those three.
Sorry.
No, they're good questions. They're all important. So I think when the ASF was set up, nobody realised the extent of the problem. The general message being given was, yeah, most of them are okay. Most adoptive families are okay. It's only a few. And then it's like the floodgates were opened and loads of people were getting in touch wanting help. I think dependency, it tickles me really, because it is a complaint often made, and we often hear that. Oh my goodness, this is attachment therapy. Whether you're doing DDP or whether you're doing TheraPlay, you're developing an attachment relationship. You're doing those modalities because the parent's important to be part of the therapy.
Yeah.
Rather than the child developing a relationship with a therapist confidentially, individually. So if you're doing an attachment therapy, and Family Futures model would fit with the DDP TheraPlay, you want there to be an attachment built. And if as a therapist you can't build an attachment with the parents, it's going to be very hard to do it, to help the parent do it with the child.
Mm.
So no, from our point of view, I know clinically, if I have a good relationship with the parents, then I can be more helpful. if I can't develop that, then that's not a good indicator as to how things are going to go. So yes, we would see developing. You don't want to ultimately want to make yourself redundant. You know, we work intensively, but eventually, lovely to get to the point of saying you don't need us for a while.
Yeah,
in 6 months, come back in if you have a problem. That would be the aim, but you need some dependence. See going on to make it work. Mm. And then there was a third question in there as well.
I can't remember what it was.
I can't remember what it was.
Therapy, dependency.
SGOs? Did you talk about SGOs?
No. I don't think I mentioned SGOs.
The voices in my head. Tell you.
Yeah, it was the voice.
Sorry, I can't recall.
No, don't be sorry. I might come honestly, back. Sometimes what happens is my brain just goes, bleh! And it doesn't make any sense, and then I have to revisit, which I kind of did, and then we've both forgotten, and well, all three of us have forgotten actually, so that's all right. Don't worry, it might come back to me. So
okay,
I've gone through my old papers. I've just done it there while you two were talking, and I've gone through my old papers, and it was 87% of funding applications in the first year of the FAL were below 5,000, and actually 75% were below 3,000. I mean, obviously there's cost inflations and all of that, and the fund hasn't really crept up. I guess we're putting money on something that's really difficult and very tangible. Yeah, it's, you know, but do you think that we've had special, I mean, we have had special treatment in adoption, but do you think that's been justified in relation to the numbers of adopted children versus the number in kinship, special guardianship, permanent fostering arrangements?
Well, I think it's really good that kinship families, special guardianship families, can now access the ASF. Yeah. Confusingly now, it's called the Adoption Support Fund. It doesn't make that so easy for them, and it's not often known about, so they're often not told.
Yeah.
So there's a lack of communication. And that does lead to a question about what about kids from foster care. We do have in our treatment service children who are fostered. But usually it's because things are at a very serious point. But really, all of those children deserve to have specialist services, which are qualified and experienced in working with children with trauma. And my view would be, and have a dyadic approach where the parent and child work together.
Yeah.
Yeah, not everyone, I suppose, would agree, but that would be my view. The other thing I should say, because Rosemary from Austin said I must mention, we are not for profit. So, and we're passionate about that, and that's why we're rolling out our fostering service as a not-for-profit fostering service. Because money is such a big issue, and it causes so much difficulty getting it. But, you know, we don't want to be an agency that preen the top off that money and make money out of these children's lives and suffering. That's something else I'm really passionate about.
Well, I think that's really interesting to know that you're a not-for-profit, because I'd not given any thought to that point. But I think that, I would say that the perception of Family Futures is that you are the gold standard from a therapeutic perspective. I know I don't want to butter you up, but I think everyone would acknowledge that it comes at a cost.
Yeah.
That you don't scrimp. And if I'm being frank, I remember conversations at the DfE where we broke down the figures and sometimes going, blimey, that's a lot of money. That's a life-changing amount of money. But that's, you know, that's 7 years ago. It doesn't seem fair.
Yeah.
I have a question that's maybe slightly a curveball. Thinking about adoption, and, you know, you mentioned, you know, the landscape's moved really significantly. Do you think that it's ethical to continue to place children for adoption when it's clear that the needs of that cohort of children have become, we've almost condensed those adopted children down to the most vulnerable, the most impacted? Is it ethical for adoption to kind of continue without the level of support that you're kind of advocating?
I don't think so. I think we set parents up to fail. And I think we know, you know, you'll both know as adoptive parents, you'll know from Adoption UK, it destroys people's lives and they don't realise. They're desperate for children they decide that they're going to go through adoption. And however much you're told, however much you prepare, whether it's Family Futures or anyone else preparing, however you're prepared, nothing can prepare you for what it's like when a traumatized child comes into your life. And the impact that it's going to have on you, how you feel about yourself, on your couple relationship, on your family system, and how other people are going to feel, it is, yes, life-changing and not a good way for lots of couples, single adopters. And surely, you know, it's immoral for us to, as professionals, to be doing this without putting proper support in place. And then we know that those children, we see, and I'm on another little ramble, so stop really good. We see children coming into the treatment service who are the children of adopted children, so that the birth parents were adopted themselves and never got help when they were adopted. And then they've gone on, got into a relationship, and their child's being removed. And yeah, it's just, you can't make it all better. There's not a magic cure. Even Family Futures, we do not have a magic cure. It's a lot of hard work, but we could do more to ensure that all parents have access without fighting to the right support.
So, I mean, is that a model that your adoption service sort of is, that you will only proceed with an adoption when you feel that the support is appropriate? And roughly how many adoptions a year do you run through? I don't know whether you can tell me that. Is that?
Yeah, no, I mean, it's a handful, less than five a year. So it's small, very small. Not every single, it's very hard to get the funding agreed. It was easier before. It's not easy now. We do not make ourselves popular, sadly, sometimes by really digging our heels in and saying, no, this cannot. It's a painful battle. It does depend on the parents sometimes being in agreement with us. And sometimes parents get to the point of just saying, I just want the child. I'll go with a smaller package, or I think we'll be okay. There's few of those. Mostly we have managed to get packages for all the children that come through with us. And there we've been able to, therefore, the team, the social worker and the therapist who co-work the assessment of the adopter, then are part of the assessment, the treatment process. The therapist will follow the child and family through. So that means we really know the parents well.
Mm-hmm.
And that helps.
Yeah, because, I mean, no, let's face it, that wouldn't happen in local authority, would it?
No.
Yeah. And actually, not many VAAs either. Or, you know, that's quite an unusual.
In the adoption assessment is unusual. Yeah, that isn't standard practice. It's more expensive because you've got two. But it really enriches the task and helps, because we use a lot of the work, the therapy tools, creative arts tools that we use in therapy, we use as part of the assessment of the adopter or adopters. And that means they have tried some of these things out for themselves, and they're more aware of what their child might need or how the tools might help and how the therapy can help. I mean, I wouldn't say we've got it all perfectly right. It's a complicated process, and I would personally like not to be having the battles with regions about funding for our placements to have support. And I think everywhere this should be possible. So sort of,
I mean, there's no doubt about it. Over the last, 10, how long's a piece of string that adoption has developed into something that's, you know, you wouldn't recognise it from possibly 15, 20 years ago, would you? And so I guess, I mean, we always talk about the changing face of it. And especially now, you know, SGOs are on the rise. There's this kind of, let's face it, adoption has lost its shine. It's, you know, we used to look at it like it was a gold star thing. I mean, what do you, in your opinion, from what you've seen, what, the conversations you have, what is your opinion on the future of adoption? I mean, is it going to be a thing in 10 years' time? Or?
I mean, I suppose I have a bit of a view that it's a roller coaster, that things will change. You know, we've had the regions come in. They are wanting to make sure that they assess and approve the adopters and they don't have to pay the interagency fee, and that they can do all the assessments and approvals and keep it in their house. Will the ASF continue? Will the children that suddenly went off the register, a lot of them, from one deep dive they did into the data, 97 out of 100 had gone back into foster care. So I think there's likely to be that this is how things are now. I think we need to be embracing contact, facilitated contact, integrated with life story work, and that we need to be embracing fostering, permanent fostering, long-term fostering as another option that has contact support, that has therapy, and things might change. And maybe special guardianship parents are certainly a bid for them. Oh my goodness, they do need more help than they're getting.
Mm. Yeah.
You know, you don't have to. You can be approved as a special guardianship parent and not have the right number of bedrooms. If you're a foster carer or an adopter, you have to have the bedrooms. Mm. You don't if you're an SGO. What on earth? We've got parents who haven't got a bed, who are on the sofa.
Yeah.
Parents whose health is such that, how are they managing? It's shocking. I don't know how we can do it to people. So I don't think I have particularly have a need to say adoption is the answer, but we need to think we have these traumatized in our care. What do we need to do that's best for them?
Mm-hmm.
Whatever placement they're in. And can we actually change the trajectory whereby we know so many kids are ending up in prisons and psychiatric hospitals?
Yeah.
We not have birth parents of tomorrow that we're creating? Can we actually change things?
When we were just before we start press record, you mentioned that you're experiencing more families choosing permanence, and I guess that links into fostering. And I think that, I'd be interested to know your views on that, because permanence is not, it's called permanence, but it's not legally permanent, is it? So can you tell me about where that trend has come from, and you know, just your thoughts and reflections on that, really?
I mean, I think at the moment there aren't children to adopt. There are lots of people who want to adopt still, infertile couples or single adopter who are desperate. They are going to time out of being able to adopt. If the landscape changes and there are more kids coming in, there'll be a point where those parents will not be considered the right age to adopt. And I think that it's possible to say, well, okay, long-term fostering, where it's not just a sort of emergency placement, but a child who is assessed, we would want to assess them, carefully matched, that there is support which we can offer within the fostering fee. We have looked at the figures, and the bit that normally gets creamed off as for profit actually can go into providing the therapy. So we're not looking at saying, okay, it's more money for this. We're thinking, right, well, we could do our therapy within the already fee for fostering. And that it's possible with those children that in time, you know, if it's a long-term placement and it goes well and it's well supported, they might stay put. They might get special guardianship orders later, or they might opt to be adopted later on. And that's still permanency for a child.
Yeah.
And I think we need to think flexibly and differently, because it doesn't work if the, what do they call it, the deep dive they did of the 100 children, 3 went to adoption, 97 went back into foster care. Well, where are these foster carers going to come from? What's going to happen to those 97 children? And there are always going to be those children that are really tricky to place.
Yeah.
They're still going to need homes. They're still going to need a lifelong connection.
So is Family Futures actively recruiting sort of foster carers for that permanent role, as well as the sort of the more, standard or bog standard, you know, temporary fostering, respite, parent and child? Do you do parent and child?
You do parent and child or care and child, depending on people's preference normally. Well, our plan is, and what we're piloting and has been going on in the same time in our open evening this evening, is to say to parents, honestly, this is what's going on. There aren't many children on the register. The children who are on the register have huge difficulties. So permanence through fostering is an option. And this gives you a way that you can have a family and a child and do something really good for some children, and that we will provide support along with this to make sure that it goes as well as it possibly can. Mm-hmm. Is that answering your question?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think Family Futures sort of is a very local service, but it's a national service as well. Is it, you're a small mm-hmm. service, but you have a big voice, you know, you have a big presence in the system. A lot of people know about you. And what do you think the future holds for Family Futures as you're coming up to your 25th anniversary, is it soon?
We are indeed. We are. It is 25 on the 1st of April, 23. We'll be going for 25 years. I can't believe this was never what we thought when we set it up.
Scott and I are available for parties and canapés.
I will make sure you get an invite.
Excellent.
I think we've never had a plan to get huge. I think we were at one point, we were being encouraged to open other offices. Mm. And we were like, no, this just doesn't seem like a good idea. We'll lose the quality of what we're doing. You know, I can just about cope with what I'm doing. I don't think I could take on another office. But what seems more important for us is to do what we're doing and to keep doing it well and to keep our quality and to continue with our research to evidence what works and to disseminate our thinking and to train people so that other people take on the ideas and the things that we think work. Because we don't want to take over the world. We want to make sure that we promote changes in thinking, new practice, what's best. That would be our hope for the next years.
Yeah. Excellent. I think what's always interesting about voluntary and charities and all that sort of stuff is that you have a passion for what you do. So, you know, this year, we're now in a new year. Last year, up until March, I worked for Adoption Plus. And I'm a very similar kind of setup in terms of the passion that is there within the team, within the staff base. You know, very similar to Family Futures, actually, in terms of not necessarily the you know, all the therapies and stuff, but certainly the approach is very much similar. So I guess the point I'm trying to make really is that, you know, there should be more of Family Futures and Adoption Plus around, but not necessarily those individual organizations. If that makes sense. Yeah. I don't know if I'm talking rubbish now, aren't I? No.
I don't think so. No, I think you're making perfect sense.
Am I? Okay, because I'm getting worried. I've been up since five, and I said to Al, I said, I'm really my best. So I don't know if my brain and my mouth are working. I don't know. They may well not be. What did you say? Did you say nothing new or something?
No, I was going to say can't tell the difference, but I held it in and didn't, and just thought it instead.
So I guess because what I find, and you know, I work, I run what's called a social enterprise in Ireland for FASD, and what we found is within that there's so many different organisations offering similar things, not necessarily the same things. But it's there for a reason. It's there because there is something missing from, I don't want to blame the NHS or CAMHS or anything, but it's missing from the kind of what families need to be able to survive. Mm-hmm. So, you know, therefore, these organisations are set up to fill that little void or that big void, little, big, medium, whatever it is, but they have to fight for every single penny to be there and to be able to keep families together.
And I think more of them around. I mean, there are, you know, different, some are different agencies, but we need more. And, you know, it'd be great if we had a, what is a, basically a sort of, it's never going to be identical, but a standard multidisciplinary assessment that is something that you can access, but you're going to get the same basic quality. And that should be something that is rolled out across the country. And we need to continue researching what works, what makes a difference. We're currently working with Dr. Mukherjee to do an audit of all the children and young people who have completed our treatment program to see what the outcomes are, if they are likely or highly likely to have FASD.
Right.
Because we want to look at, you know, we know from our research from 1916 and 19, I've forgotten the dates. That could happen. Anyway, we know from our research, the last one was definitely in 19, it got published, that we were really the outcomes for children, and children actually changed, and there were statistically significant changes, positive changes. So we want to see what happens if you look at that data plus the new data that we've got since that time, and see what the outcomes are, if you think of it in terms of FASD. Because FASD needs a clear intervention that's going to be helpful. And at the moment, that isn't clear. I mean, I know integration is helpful and certain sorts of parenting, but we need something more than that.
I, as a parent of one definitely with FASD and one potentially with FASD, I totally agree with that. So, Al. Any more questions from Al Coates, MBE?
No, I've noticed
I'm the odd one out tonight.
We'll have to put you forward next, Scott.
You lot, we are MBEs, and here's me sitting with my no BE, as I like to refer to it.
Oh, don't cry. breaking my heart. No, I think it's been really, really helpful to talk to you. And I think that, you know, as an organization, Family Futures is just well known, and it's lovely to chat to you. Is there anything that I know that there was things you were hoping to talk to? Is there anything that we've not asked you that you were hoping we would ask you?
I think we've covered a wide range of topics.
Yeah.
We could be here all week, all month.
Good.
I mean, let's face it.
I think we've covered a lot. As long as it answers the things that you really wanted to find out from me, then I think we've done pretty well. I don't know how long.
Do you know the main thing that I wanted out of tonight was to kind of put a face to Family Futures, because it's a really interesting, like I say, known about Family Futures forever, known lots of families who've come through your doors, but actually never really engaged with someone with a face, I was going to say. That's the wrong thing to say. Everybody has a face at Family Futures. Someone who could talk to us and tell us more about it. So that has been really useful. And, you know, this is a sign of the times, really, isn't it? You know, you're on a podcast, and, you know, that's, quite a well-downloaded podcast as well, it has to be said. But, you know, I think,
I just had visions of Jay's PR people going, no, you really have to go on. And they're going, do I have to go on? They're going, no, you really have to go on.
Doesn't everybody have to have their arm twisted to come on?
My sort of takeaway from this really is that, and I kind of knew the work that you did, but actually I didn't know you were not for profit. I didn't think you were all living like kings and queens down in North London.
No, clearly.
But what is interesting, I think in some ways there's a gold standard that you're trying to replicate. It sounds like there's a message, which is we need to do better for children. Now, I think there's plenty of people who would maybe fall out with you over the money issue. But to me, it seems like, well, yeah, actually that if we, yes, we start with adoption, but it's all of those children who've got those levels of adversity and experiences and challenges. So it feels really positive. You should start a campaign. Do a thing.
Do a thing.
Do a thing like Scott does.
What does Scott do? I don't know.
I have no idea what you do.
No.
he messes on the internet for a bit. Jay, it's been lovely to speak to you, and we're so looking forward to the 25 years party.
Yeah.
Yes.
If you need DJs, don't ask us. But it's been wonderful to speak to you. So thank you so much for your time.
Thank you,
and,
Jay.
And look after yourself.
Thank you. And you are truly very welcome to come and visit. If you're ever going to be in the Hornsey Road area, please email. And I'd love to meet you both face to face live.
So be careful what you wish for, because we're in North London tomorrow together. And so if you hadn't said email, you might have just got a knock on your door.
Hiya.
Yeah, we will do that. Maybe we'll do a live web podcast thing from Hornsey Road.
Yeah.
Excellent.
You're very welcome. And I'll get you invited for the party.
Yes, definitely. Yeah.
Thank you. Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.